Okay, some people are not gonna hear my advertisement. That's fine. I'm gonna advertise for the project that it's a good project. And it's a good game. It's a real game. Like, it makes use. It's like if you have played Telestration, it's almost like exactly that, except you have an extra step. Otherwise, it's a telephone in a loop. But because physics is deterministic, so if everybody got it right, it will actually go back exactly right. So one of the crucial steps when you play the game is that at that some point, your last teammate, everybody is going to be the last teammate, but at the last step, you'll be staring at a matrix element and trying to figure out what process it is. And if you can figure it out, the chance that everything went well is pretty high. Okay, and oh, yeah, sorry, forgot to mention. Today there is no joke, but there is on the portal, because we are still talking about gravitational waves. I didn't write a joke for gravitational waves. Anyway, so on the portal, there is some description of the project. You don't have to read it. It's a bunch of like, it's like putting in a scenario, like why we're playing this game, and it started with like alien attacks and stuff. So you don't have to read them. Like you can come to the Thursday, the project tutorial without reading any of the debriefing. I don't think you're missing out any physics there. But if you want to see, you know, why we're doing this, you can read about it. And I think I just did the teams today. Oh, this is important. And I'll emphasize again tomorrow. That is the tutorial. I really need everybody be there at the beginning. And by then you would know who are your teammates, and then you should be trying to catch each other. So because I want to, like, as soon as we start, and then I explain how this game works, and the rest of the time, Bruno and I will be floating around and help with the physics part of the game. Okay, so the first thing we do today is I want to explain, besides using a balloon, why the C conjugation is called a charge conjugation. I mean, we haven't seen charge yet in the tutorial. We just know that somebody do, but it's somehow implied, like, because you're getting a real, in quotes, spinner when you're not in Mariana space. It's really in quotes. It says you make some connection between Psi and the Psi star together with this C thing. But you know, when you learned about the real scalar, there's one thing about a real scalar that you should know, is it doesn't carry charge. Okay? So let's see, why is this charge conjugation? I'll write out the QED Lagrangian, and I'll write it out, not using the covariant derivative. I want to write it out. The covariant derivative is just bookkeeping. When you standard model, whenever you actually say, what is interaction exactly? You always write everything out. Okay, so this is my Lagrangian, and I'll take the easy equation of motion, which just get rid of the Psi bar. I'll make a copy of Psi. So this thing is zero. That's the equation of motion. You take the Lagrangian, get rid of psi bar, the rest is the equation of motion. What you have seen yesterday is this, the Dirac part will still give you a Dirac equation. But since now we have two terms, it's the relative sign matters. So just in case we didn't miss anything out, I'm going to write it out the first term too. So the step, hopefully you are now familiar with, is step one, take complex conjugate, CC. So I become minus I, psi mu, partial mu psi will become a bar, but your gamma mu will become a star. M is M, you have psi star. And on the other side, you have E gamma mu star, A mu is a real field, and the psi star. So the only difference is the kinetic term has an I and it become minus I. That's actually what lead us to believe the condition should be C gamma mu star C inverse equals minus gamma mu. So we need that minus sign to get rid of this so we get the Dirac equation back. Okay, so what do we do? What's the step two? Step two is multiply everybody by this C matrix. Right? I mean, you did it yesterday. And here. And as you have shown yesterday, this part become the Dirac equation for the C conjugate spinner. And the thing is, the other part, if I insert C inverse C in it, you will see that this minus sign will turn whatever in front become a plus sign. So our conclusion is, if psi is a spinner, interact with the electromagnetic field with charge E, now it seems that the conjugate spinner will interact with minus E. So the charge flip sign, the rest is the same. So that's why that C psi star operation is often referred to as charge conjugation. So that close what we talked about yesterday. And what are we going to focus on today are the Feynman rules. We need the Feynman rules to play the game. So we're going to learn about some of the Feynman rules today, and tomorrow we'll have a whole tutorial to learn more Feynman rules. So the goal of the Feynman rule is to find about the external leg. Let me give you a small, argument why I believe it's not a one. So suppose some fermion external leg going in to some vertex, maybe something comes out, who knows, but then it travels as a propagator, and it get out. So journey of a fermion line. Suppose the fermion external leg is still one. Then I know how to write down this. There are some vertex. But I know the propagator. So I happily claim this is my final answer. If the external leg is one, because there is only a propagator there. For example, I can make it to be a scalar, so there's nothing there. There's just like some I lambda there, another I lambda there, and the scalar is one. So I can write this result as I lambda squared times the propagator. And why is this result not appropriate? How can't we just accept this is the result? And then walk away. So I'm talking about writing down the scattering amplitude according to some Feynman diagram, right? What does a scattering amplitude has what property? In other words, what does P slash stand for? It's all this slash notation. I mean, it's definitely, that's the problem. Is that P slash, or whatever slash, according to Feynman, it stands for something contracted with the gamma matrices. Okay, very good. P is good. I like P. It's just momentum. I know P. But a gamma, if I really want to be very specific about the gamma, just as when we recognize gamma as a monster, it has other things, right? It has other index. That means the P slash also have other index. So people happily write P slash plus M, but what they really mean is P mu gamma mu AB plus M identity AB. That's the only way that this expression actually makes sense. Okay, mu's are fine. Mu's, they are contracted, but now you have some free index of AB hanging out here. And that's what we conclude, that we cannot call that a scattering amplitude. Your scattering amplitude should be a Lorentz scalar. Oh, so now is the time we're like, oh, things are not that easy after all. But how do we dig this external leg out? Well, it's hard at this point to talk without interaction. So we are going to talk about an interaction. And this is the famous Yukawa interaction. In some more complicated, bizarre form, like it's lambda is a 3 by 3 matrices or whatever. This, the most complicated form is probably founded in particle physics, and it's a term known as responsible for fermion mass. I can explain further if you take a standard model. Otherwise, you have to come to me. Okay? So it's really the simplest interaction we can write down. It has psi bar psi. It's the simplest bilinear. And it has a real scalar. Simplest other thing. So this is the best model we can study. It's not even a toy model. It's a real model. Okay. So I'll make some convention. Dirac, I claim they have mass small m, and the Klein-Gordon field, I claim they have mass big M. They might be important later. Is that okay? I just write down the interaction Lagrangian and skip the two free Lagrangian. Yeah, you sort of have the free Lagrangian here. And I'll carry on. Okay. We have done with propagators, so we don't quite need them. So let's just stare at this. Okay, so what I said the following will work for any interaction Lagrangian you want. So think about back when you are in the scalar case. Okay, let me give you the scalar case. Let's think about this. Okay, but for scalar, it has numbers. I'm not very good at counting numbers. Dan is very good at counting those numbers. So-called a symmetry factor. So do you remember if you see a scalar field like scalar interaction like this, what is the vertex rule? Okay, momentum space. Sorry, it's been a while for me to do the position space. Just momentum space, what is the vertex rule for this field?
Minus I
lambda. That's it. Here's a question. That's a very good answer. And I'm going to draw the fine. Is that okay? I draw the vertex like this? So dashed line is scalar. Okay. My question is, why is phi not on your vertex rule? What happened to the phis? You integrated over, okay, but like, why can't I have a phi? What happens to the phi? Like when you do, it's integrated over, but so what I'm trying to say is like, suppose we're doing a scalar LSC. You have something like this, and the next step is you expand it. This thing. And the dot, dot, dot means that you can expand how many terms you want. So what happens to this phi, if I put it this way? How do you proceed if you see a time-ordered correlation function? You contracted. So that's really the deep reason that the phi doesn't show up in the vertex, because they all get contracted away. Okay? So, very good. So, can somebody tell me what's the Yukawa interaction, Feynman rule is? Remember, if it's a field, it gets contracted away. If it's a field, it gets contracted away. So this is really how you write down all the interaction, however complicated your interaction is. Throw away all the field. Whatever left has to be kept. Okay, for this one, go ahead. It's also minus I lambda, because all the field get contracted away. And this will be interesting by the end of the lecture. For this interaction, you're like, of course, I see lambda in front of field. I take the lambda minus. But it's getting more and more interesting the more complicated your interaction is. And we will see a like upgraded 2.0 interaction. And for that one, the vertex log is rule is slightly more complicated. Okay. So the idea is I turn dashed line into solid line, because this is always the rule when you draw a Feynman diagram. If you have two different type of field, make them different. Okay? Rule number one, different. You can do squiggly or curly or whatever, dotted, if they just need to be different. And this is a kind of a convention between books, but there's always books, you know, do something else. But the important thing about a fermion is it has a partner called an antifermion. And the important thing about these fermions, as we just discussed at the first thing of the lecture, what does the fermions carry? Charge. So we need to indicate its flow. But you know, there are fermions that carry positive charge, negative charge. So drawing the charge is actually, it's harder to, let's say, your rules will be complicated if we draw the flow of the charge because of the positive minus thing. So what the people's convention is drawing the flow of the fermions. So fermion, always flow in with an arrow, says there's a fermion coming. And the antifermion has the other arrow. And the fermion always flows. Okay, but this is very important. So if you think about it, if you draw a Feynman diagram, we have two things. You have the propagators, and then you have the vertex. And then yes?
Why do we draw only two different lines, not three different lines?
In this, you can. But it's because the fermion and antifermion is described by the same Dirac field. So we kind of draw the same lines according to what type of field it is.
I remember we drew different types of lines for scalar field when it's complex.
Okay. So if you have a, let's see. Okay, the one thing that I'm happy that I'm teaching the course is I don't have to understand the symmetry factors. I did try, but I never remember how I understood it. I even have a video for it. But anyway, the point is if you're doing fermion field, there are so many arrows, there is never symmetry. So anyway, so if you want to do this, so what I claim, okay, I have to introduce some lines, and I claim this is for the phi, and this will be for the complex field. And the both of the complex field should use the same type of lines. What distinguish the particle and antiparticle should be encoded in the arrow. Okay. Okay. So now this is a very, very important point. Is that whenever you draw a Feynman diagram, so it needs to flow. Okay. I'll tell you my analogy that I come up with this morning. Later, when we have a Feynman diagram, now we just have a vertex. Okay, people are happy with this vertex. We're gonna stick with this vertex for a while. I probably should write here, arrows. It flows. So if you like topologically change your Feynman diagram such that all your fermion lies in a line, you should always say just it flows. it should flow. Okay, so now let's study our 2-to-2 interacting. And let's see, the first term looks like this. See, I like my correlation, time ordered correlation function. We don't have Feynman rules, so that's basically our only chance of getting any results. So what do you think this will give us? This is called the zeroth order. Nothing integrated yet. Nothing brought down from the exponential yet. I have 2-to-2 scattering. So what do you think this will give us? This the answer to this question. Yes?
Come.
They don't interact. Very good. It's like 1, move to 3, 2, move to 4, and then you plus the other one. 1, move to 4. Except you have to pay attention to all these arrows, but there's not much we need to discuss. It looks like this. Yes? Okay, but, new question. In the scalar case, how many diagrams you have? 3. And now I have 2. Can we have 3? What happens to this one? That's a very good answer. We don't contract psi with psi. So know this diagram. Very good. Okay, zeroth order didn't break a threat. The next level. The next level is we have one of them gets brought down. From the e to the I L interaction thing. So this is the first one. I might have lost a minus sign and stuff, but yes? What do you think of this one? Zero. Because there's a single phi. Has no partner to contract. Thing you learned from the scalar field that the single field always goes to zero. You can think about the mode expansion, always have an annihilation field there. Annihilate this, annihilate right, boom, disappeared. Wow, look, we're making great progress, right? Okay, the next level is second order. And you can think about early days before Feynman write down his Feynman rules when they do the fourth order. It will take a while. So I promise this is the last order we'll stay with. It might not be the last order in your project. Okay. So this is crazy, right? But here, we're doing 2-to-2 scattering. And I'll give you a nice information. We're still at a tree level. In that case, have you talked about the 3 channels? The 3 magical channels. Channels. So it's the 3 channels are are it's easy to understand. It says particle one wants to find the partner to contract either directly or through some other steps. But if you want to draw a fermion line, basically this fermion line has a beginning, has an end. So if one is the beginning, it's looking for an end. And in 2-to-2 scattering, you have three other particles, hence three channels. Okay? So that's how we think about 2-to-2 scattering, which is 1, 2, 3, 4. And we always think about, ask the question, can one meet two through some other things, but one eventually should meet two if it's a tree. We go through some branches, you get the two. And similarly, that you ask the question, can one meet three? And then you ask the question, can one meet four? Okay, so I think this is important enough to figure out what does this Feynman diagram looks like. So you will have time to do it yourself. Draw the diagram on your paper, and I'll be walking around and see, and if everybody has some diagram drawn, then we'll start the class again. And I will draw that a little better. Okay? So there are three channels. You ask, if one meets two, what does the diagram looks like? If one meets three, what does the diagram looks like? If one meets four, what does the diagram looks like? If you have 2-to-2, you make a pair meet, then the other pair should meet too. So it's the C for 2 equals 6, but divided by 2. Okay, so please draw the Feynman diagram. You can draw it as if you're doing the phi cubic theory, and then put the fermion aspect back in, because you already did the phi cube in your homework, right? Yes? Phi cube is in homework? I don't know, Dan's homework. Dan's last homework. And Dan only has one homework. So Dan's homework. Remember what you're doing in Dan's homework? I want you to do that. But whenever you see a fermion line, you add some arrows. Okay. Yeah?
We can have the scale fields with the spinner fields.
No, we won't. We will only attract the field of the same type. Because remember, contraction gave you some sort of commutators. Mm-hmm. And it's not even the same type of particle. You can use A for scalar and B or C for spinner. Yep. It goes from the particle. So I would say psi bar creates the particle. So it goes from psi bar to psi. Okay. Yep.
So when you draw these diagrams,
yes,
you can obviously choose the direction of the arrow.
You for us, the arrow is chosen, right? So it's a 2-to-2. So this particular barring order is saying it's a B, B to B, B.
Okay. And then what about the internal points, the vertices? You can always swap them, right?
If you swap your vertex, so it should look like this, but if you swap the vertex, it might look like that.
I mean, for example, okay.
If you have two vertex, you can always swap them. Okay, let me look.
For example, you have like a T channel.
Yeah.
So this is my X point and this is my Y point.
That's
for
right.
example.
Yeah.
But if, then is if, it the same diagram if I have, you know, because I can contract two. And
that's right. That's this one, right?
Mm.
That's this one is exactly you swap the X and the Y. No, you're not. Sorry, I'm
not
wrong.
Quite.
I'm wrong.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
But all
but
I'm doing is relabeling, like, because I get to choose
yeah,
what I can track.
Yeah, exactly. So that will consider the same diagram.
So it will come out in like the symmetry factor.
Exactly.
That's also, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry, I said something wrong. Okay, feel free to talk to other people if you have done. Okay, you will be. You have another activity to do weak contraction. Just draw the diagram, okay? Try not to do weak contraction. That's other step. Yes? Yep. There will be, but we'll only draw to three.
Okay.
Because we only expand it to the second order. At this order, there will be only three.
Can you explain again why the arrows seem to be, because the phi should be the fermion, right? And we should
yeah.
be going into the vertices.
No, phi is actually the anti-fermion. If you look,
okay, yeah.
If you look at the mode expansion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Calculate the, the function from the triple I can meet that.
Yeah, we are going to calculate that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there
wouldn't be. Well, I mean, if you just do.
Well, just for this one, they would be absorbed by the denominator, but.
I mean, you have this. Right? You always
yeah.
have this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you don't have like contributing to scattering amplitude.
Yes, scattering amplitude, no.
Yes. I didn't write the divide part. Only find the tree diagrams, as Tom pointed out. There are non-tree diagrams. I only want the tree diagram. And yes, we are going to calculate this thing. Okay. Yes. You have diagrams? If you don't have diagrams drawn, okay, very good.
This is what I thought of immediately. But
very good. Can you draw your second diagram on the second place on the board?
This one?
Yeah. It's more fun than I draw.
Go on.
Sure, sorry. I'm intercepted. Uh-huh. That's also very good, and you labeled it differently than me. That's fine. No, this is a good diagram. No, yeah, it's fine. You just you can label them whatever you want, but that's a very good diagram. Oh, wow, nice. So I would only want the tree diagram. So there is actually. Other tree diagrams. Focus on the
tree diagrams. Mean just this diagram.
Yeah. There's no loops.
Oh, no loops.
I mean, you can have loops. You can certainly have loops. But I only want the tree level. Yep. Very good. Can you draw your this diagram on the third?
This.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, the Pedro singularity. You have lots of disconnected diagrams, which you are right. I should have emphasized that the bottom is divided and we're only looking for connected diagrams. Oh, okay. But can you find one more that looks like that? Means there's no loop.
There's no loop
at all.
Okay.
That's what I meant. Define negatively. Very good.
This one doesn't exist.
Yeah, can you draw this? Yes. Add a cross. I don't think it exists. It's a very important point. Okay, very good. We have seen some diagrams. Okay, we have seen some diagrams. And this one, be careful. So there is the one meeting three, happily, and the one meeting four, happily, with, we're drawing on 2D, so that's very good. Okay, so let me emphasize again, your fermion arrows, that the flow is very important. So, you know, suppose we have Mickey Mouse. Consider your Feynman diagram a maze, okay? It's like, what do I do with Halloween lecture? So here's my Halloween. So Mickey Mouse entered the maze. It should be able to follow the arrow, and get out of the maze. Don't trap Mickey Mouse in the maze is the slogan. Okay, whenever you draw a Feynman diagram with fermions, send the mouse in. If you get out, that's good. If you don't get out, there's something wrong with it. For example, as Ruhi drew a cross on this diagram, that's a very good idea. See, if I do that link, you send a Mickey Mouse in, it gets trapped there. Unhappy Mickey Mouse, trapped in the maze. Then it become a frog. Anyway, so this process did not happen. And which, same thing, because it's Halloween, I will call it the ghost process, because it didn't happen. Okay. Ghost process. Don't draw ghost process for me in the interview. When you draw the process, send the Mickey Mouse in. If you pass that test, you are very largely correct. Okay, so that's the part we draw diagram. And the next part is we actually dig in the LSC reduction formula and calculate this scattering amplitude. I mean, that's how we find out the rules, right? You find a sample scattering amplitude, you calculate it, and you say, if I make these rules, then I don't have to calculate, I just read off the answer. But we're not there yet. Rules are very far away from us. We are stuck with LSC. Since it's a perfect time, let's take 5-minute break, and I'll try to wave my hands really hard to make you believe what's the external lag rule, and I'll prove to you. Okay? That's the plan.
Do you mean that there's two possibilities?
That's it. That's
okay.
So once we fix the arrows,
Thank you.
pinches.
That matters. For example, scalar field doesn't matter. So do you agree? If I want to come back to weak contraction, the line drawn from 1 to x, from x to 3, corresponding to this weak contraction. Okay, now it's your turn. Can you figure out how many sweeps can I put it in the way that I don't have to break a sweat? So now it's like all entangled together. Isn't this nice? So how many sweeps? It's advised that you do one pair first. Think about how do I bring psi 3 and psi x bar together? And then you get rid of them because they become propagator. Then think about the next step. Okay, very interesting. Okay, let's do this, okay? So first step, I jumped a step that seems very confusing. How about you tell me how many it takes to bring this?
Two?
Does everybody agree? If I just want to put 3 next to x in the correct order, remember it's always unbarred to barred in a weak contraction. So that's 2, but then that's gone. This is the propagator, who cares? Then you have this. How many contraction is this? How many swap is this? to put it in the correct order. Look carefully. Pay attention. Remember, only this is a propagator. The other one is a swept propagator.
Two times.
Two more times, okay. Very good, that's nice. That means we don't have any minus signs. And the next thing I'm going to do is to draw something around this. So this is what we're going to focus on. The one comes, looks like a monster, but I'm drawing. So there's going to be one set of this associated with psi 3, and one set of this associated with psi 1 bar. That's how LSC works, right? So this is one of those integral. This is the other one of the integral. Very good. Now I'm start waving my hands to tell you what happens about our external leg. So what should I ask first? Okay, you know what happened to the field? We already asked that. Field gets contracted to something and become a propagator, huh? Right? Okay, so well, propagator has their own propagator finite rules, then we don't worry about it. So what happens to all this e to the ikx or whatever thing? What happened to them eventually in the scattering amplitude?
It's a delta function.
Yeah, it gives a delta. Eventually, they will become the four momentum delta that Weinberger point out. There's one and only one. That the delta says the incoming momentum equals outgoing momentum. Very good. What happens to this thing? What happened to the Dirac operator? Let me remind you what happened. You just contracted to produce a propagator. And you have the Dirac operator next to the propagator.
Another delta.
Another delta. So they become delta. So this is that what I just said, the Dirac, this is not new. In the Klein-Gordon theory, you also have a Klein-Gordon operator acting on the propagator and give you a delta. Same thing happens here. You have a Dirac operator, and this is going to be contracted with somebody. So there's got to be a propagator, and this whole thing become a delta. And in a fancy language, this is what they called the external leg is amputated. Now you don't write a propagator on that external leg is because this happened. You used to have a propagator, but you also have a Dirac operator coming from LSZ, that propagator is killed. Legs beaten off by the monster. Okay, so what do we have left? That's all in that little I3F, right? Everything I circled is what are coming out of that integral. That's coming. Don't look at the other things. The other things come from other wire. This is the one actually comes because of this third particle. So what do we have left in this whole blob? This becomes propagator, that kills the propagator, that becomes momentum conservation. What do we have left? What do we have left? U bar. It tells us, so this argument tells you that three, one of these threes, this one, the external leg better give me a U bar because that's all that's left. And I can give you the same argument with that blob of one thing says the one must come with a U. Okay. So that's my hand waving argument, but you can see it's pretty solid because everything else disappeared. What can it be? So now we're going to do a long calculation and see exactly what happened when yeah, but the argument goes through. You don't have to do the next calculation. But I think a lot of the people in this room is more would like to see the calculation rather than just me waving hands as they all disappeared. So that's what I'm going to do. And this is the calculation you will see me restoring the spinner index painfully, which you might have to do it for me in the interview. So we start with this. At this point, you can see I'm copying what I have before, except adding spinner index. Okay, so it should have contracted a whole, but this is what it is. It has to contract this way. Almost done. Yeah, so this is the first part of LSC, previously in a blob, and this is the second part of the LSC. The only difference is I contract them. Okay. So let's digest a little bit. So the spinner, whatever the integral it is itself, it has no index. If you think about it, remember where your integral comes from. Your integral comes from something like this, no spinner index. And this slash give you an index AB. They both need to be contracted. That's the only way you can write the spinner index right. And then you do the other one again. The slash give you index. The index must be contracted within that. And then you inserted a vertex. It's integrated over and it's a Lagrangian. So the index must be contracted. Yes? So let's see what happens to this. This is a weak contraction. This gives you a propagator. Yeah, just the first contraction. It's the weak contraction give you propagator and make sure you carry the spinner index. And the next one is the other propagator. And we made sure to carry our index. So you basically have the thing you stuck into LSC, but I just take the few away, contract them, turns into propagator. Contract them, turn into propagator. I didn't do anything about the other stuff. And the next thing is to realize I have this Dirac operator, I have this propagator. They meet together, give me delta. And remember contracting your spinner index. Now I'll do the same on the other side. And it'll give you another delta, because that's what operator acting on propagator do. So now we're actually done with the calculation. Contract against operator, that's what I have been hand waving, but now I'm actually going to write down the expression down. So yes, it does turn into a bunch of delta. And the integral turns x, this delta, you can actually integrate it over. It just turns x1 and x3 into x. So if you want me to write it down, the whole thing the only thing that's left is the U3 bar and the U1. And it gives you this to be momentum conservation thing. This is interesting. It tells us that when we have the Feynman rule, you have to go against the flow. The fermion flow goes upward, and when you write down your result, it's actually inverse this flow. You go from 3 to 1. And this is part of our rule we discovered. We discovered some external rule, but the important rule by doing that calculation, it says when you write down the scattering amplitude of the fermion line, you have to start where it ends and go the other way to where it begins. That's the only way you can make the 3, U bar 3 shows up first, and then go to U1. But this shouldn't surprise you, because we know this gave you some number. The other way gave you some spin, like some matrix. And we are looking for a number. So you can see, if you carefully select what you want to compute in that monster, it's not that bad. Propagator canceled. Bunch of delta. Transfer all the delta. Transfer all the delta. And you'll get the answer. Okay, so the next thing to do is say all the this line is gone. Let's see what's the other line tells us. Right? We want to 4 to go to y. And y to go back to 2. How many swaps? How many swaps? Be careful of the trap. You want to always want the psi to start with. So it's one step, one swap to become this, right? Super confusing. And then you need another swap. So still, even. So no extra minus signs. So that's very good. So if you, I tell you that we already worked it out one line, the result looks like this. And I just tell you there's no more minus sign. Can you tell me what the other line looks like? What's the result for the other line? So this line has particle from 1 to 3. And now we have particle from go from 2 to 4. The only interesting part will work it out. There's no minus sign. Yep.
We just swap 3 folding numbers.
That's right. It's symmetric. The other side, the rest of the other leg, you get a 1 become 2, 3 become 4, and then there's x become 1. Okay. So now all the dust has settled. We have dealt with all the spinner. That's the hard part. And you can see it works perfectly well with the rule we discovered. Is that going to be a U bar for outgoing fermion? There's going to be a U for incoming fermion. Okay, I want to finish this computation and we can actually write down the rules very nicely. Okay, so what do we have left is integration over x, integration over y, and this e to the I thingy. And there's U3 bar U1, U4 bar U2 that we tried hard, but we know that's the result. It's gotta be the result. But what do we have left is a scalar propagator. We work out that, and that's all it has left. There's a scalar propagator, you have the integrator over the internal points. But I like to integrate it over external point. Look, they're all like plane waves. So I integrated one internal line, I get the momentum conservation for the, what do you think? If I integrate it over x, I get a momentum conservation. Where does the momentum conservation happen? At the vertex x. Okay, very good. I do the other one. I get the other momentum conservation. At y. And now I can use this momentum conservation to integrate p. And this cannot be unheard of, but the result is that your p has to be replaced by the momentum that we know. And the others is the sum over all the kicks. Right? Like I use one of my momentum integral to replace P by what's there. But this you should be very familiar with. If you have a vertex, you know some momentum on them, you can use it to figure out what's the internal momentum. Let's waving hands give you an example. If there is a momentum K1 flowing in, K3 flowing out, then we can figure out what's that moment. And that's exactly what happened here. So there's no shortcuts. We did the entire computation. Now we should celebrate. And I'll write down the the rules more carefully. Incoming fermion. Incoming fermion. Normally, if you draw a fermion line, you have to draw its momentum to show that it's a fermion, not an anti-fermion. And this dot is always means the vertex. And we realize incoming fermion gives us an U. And outgoing fermion, on the other hand, this is the vertex. And this gives us a U bar. And the additional rule is that for fermion line, you need to go against the arrow. It's like Mickey Mouse come back and you wonder where it has come from. You're going against it. And in the process, you write down your scattering amplitude. So these are the rules we find today. There's actually one more rule that we found that I haven't told you yet. For example, so we still remember the other diagram. The other diagram has 1 goes to 4. So let's see what it happens. So suppose we make 1 goes to 4. So it's almost entirely the same. If you compare to these two contractions, the difference is a swap. You need one additional swap to do the 1 to 4 thing compared to the 1 to 3. That means, and you can look at the what's left over. It's not going to give you minus sign. So this is the only minus sign you gave. So it's very important that when you write down this scattering amplitude right above me, if I want to write the other one, I can say, I'll just swap 3 and 4. That is good. That's exactly what we want you to do. That's why I'm not calculating again. But there is an important minus sign between them. So remember, you want to add up all the scattering amplitude of all the diagrams, but there is a minus sign for this one. On the other hand, this particular minus sign is very easy to explain because I have two fermions getting out. Now they swap position. You're like, wait, you switched the two fermions. Of course you have a minus sign. Some other minus sign is a little harder to uncover, but this one is easily explained. Two fermions coming out, two fermions swept and coming out. Then we should expect there is a minus sign. So in the interview, I'm not going to ask you to write down two diagrams and add or subtract. But I will ask, do your two diagrams add or subtract? It's not always subtract, even if there are fermions. Okay? The important thing is fermions swept with fermions might give you minus sign. But if you have fermions swept with bosons, of course there are no minus sign. Okay, let me conclude with, like, it's more like a forecast to Thursday. Let me just mention one thing because this is easy to mention. In QED, also we already write down the interacting Lagrangian. Make me feel if I don't do it, I'm wasting something. Okay, so what's the vertex rule for this one?
I mean, A mu
is a field. So this is a vector field that can also disappear to contract it with other A field. No, I didn't do that. No, I'm not. No, I don't have a presentation. Okay. But thank you. but this one wasn't covered. Let's look at this thing. Let's find out. Maybe it's Halloween. What's the vertex rule? Yes?
Minus I E gamma mu.
Minus I E gamma mu. Thank you. And so, okay. People normally draw the squiggly line for A mu. So it kind of looks like this. It's the same fermion things, and you introduce a photon, so it looks like this. So the important thing is once you start with QED, means your vertex also have gamma in there. Gamma means order matters. So if you just think about the diagram we just did, instead of a scalar, you have a photon there. Then there's going to be a gamma between your U bar and the U's. Because when you're going against this arrow thing, you should write out everything and not change the arrow. Okay, I'll talk a little bit more about the QED on Thursday. But I think I should stop here. But I figure this is good. Like whenever you see what, no matter what your vertex complicated, again, it's the same. All the field drops out, whatever we have left, you keep.